Before we get to today's show, I'd like to hear from you. This show is nothing without our listeners, and we want to make sure we provide you with what you're looking for. Our mailbox is open to all suggestions. So if you have a topic you want to learn about or a guest you want to hear from, let us know by sending us an email to jagahealthandwellness@gmail.com. That's jagahealthandwellness@gmail.com. Now, enjoy the episode.
Back in 2016, Frank and I had a vision to amass the single largest database of muskie angling education material anywhere in the world.
Our dream was to harness the knowledge of this amazing community and share it with passionate anglers just like you.
Thus, the Ugly Pike podcast was born and quickly grew to become one of the top fishing podcasts in North America.
Step into the world of angling adventures and embrace the thrill of the catch with the Ugly Pike podcast. Join us on our quest to understand what makes us different as anglers and to uncover what it takes to go after the infamous fish of 10,000 casts.
The Ugly Pike podcast isn't just about fishing. It's about creating a tight-knit community of passionate anglers who share the same love for the sport. Through laughter, through camaraderie, and an unwavering spirit of adventure, this podcast will bring people together.
Subscribe now and never miss a moment of our angling adventures. Tight lines, everyone.
Find Ugly Pike now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
As the world gets louder and louder, the lessons of our natural world become harder and harder to hear, but they are still available to those who know where to listen. I'm Jerry Ouellette, and I was honored to serve as Ontario's Minister of Natural Resources. However, my journey into the woods didn't come from politics. Rather, it came from my time in the bush and a mushroom. In 2015, I was introduced to the birch-hungry fungus known as chaga, a tree conch with centuries of medicinal applications used by Indigenous peoples all over the globe. After nearly a decade of harvest, use, testimonials and research, my skepticism has faded to obsession, and I now spend my life dedicated to improving the lives of others through natural means. But that's not what the show is about. My pursuit of this strange mushroom and my passion for the outdoors has brought me to the places and around the people that are shaped by our natural world. On Outdoor Journal Radio's Under the Canopy podcast, I'm going to take you along with me to see the places, meet the people that will help you find your outdoor passion and help you live a life close to nature and under the canopy. So join me today for another great episode, and hopefully we can inspire a few more people to live their lives under the canopy. Well, welcome to the show again, David. You know, we spoke before. We spoke about the Toronto Sportsman Show, about leading up to it, and here we are at the show now.
Yeah, I'm back again. I've been coming to this Toronto Sportsman Show since I was 10 years old.
I know the feeling well.
Yeah.
We used to come in and see the dogs all the time with Dad, and the family thing was the spring during their March break, just like it is now. And now a little bit different. Hey, I got a booth. We're doing a podcast here, and you're on stage emceeing and along with your own booth.
That's right. I have a WSC Survival School display and booth right next to the Great Outdoor Stage where I'm emceeing, and also I have my own seminar there, trying to promote safety and not end up with people becoming statistics in the great outdoors.
Yeah. Now, tell us a bit about your businesses, David.
So I run a couple of businesses. My number one business is WSC Survival School.
Okay.
So we run camps for youth and camps for survival camps for adults. We also offer courses, anything from a one-day to a two-day overnight. But we also have an outdoor pursuit certificate. So we're not just about survival. We're more about all-around outdoor pursuits. So we have courses in winter camping and igloo building, canoeing, backpacking, homesteading and prepping. That's a big part of what we do also. And then I own another place called Marble Lake Lodge. That's a separate entity. And Marble Lake Lodge is located about an hour north of Belleville. And there we have a campground, trailer park, 6 cottages for rent, a restaurant called The Hungry Moose. So I made up that name.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably one of the luckiest people on earth. I also, in addition to that, you think, what else could he possibly have? But I also have a 340-acre off-the-grid property up in the Madawaska Valley.
Okay.
And it's amazing for hunting, fishing, nature photography, ATVing, snowmobiling, you name it. So I'm pretty much all around living the dream.
So tell us a bit about these survival camps that you're talking about, David. I mean, you mentioned some. You got youth camps, 1 or 2 days. Is it 1 or 2 days? And how young are the kids? And what are the kids learning at the survival camp at what ages?
So the one camp, we have a couple. One's called the Wilderness Experience. It's a week long, and it's all camping out. None of these expensive yurts or glamping. They're going to learn skills.
Right.
And they're going to learn outdoor survival skills, bushcrafting, foraging for wild edible plants, how to use a compass and a GPS unit, how to administer wilderness first aid. And then we do some homesteading and prepping. So how to live off the grid.
Right.
I have a cabin there that is all off the grid. I built my own solar system. We use generators, all that kind of fun stuff. So it's an all-around camp where they're actually learning, but also having fun, because it's interesting for kids to learn. But we do a lot of moose calling, and roasting marshmallows, and loon calls, and stargazing.
Right.
So it's not all about serious learning, but we want them to leave at the end of the week becoming more self-sufficient and more confident. So those are keys.
So you teach kids about orientation and things like that as well, map and compass work?
Oh, yeah. So they're going to learn how to take a compass bearing, how to read a topo map, how to use one of the Garmin GPSs to go on a go-to find route.
Right.
And never be lost. Like, if you know how to do things, the old idea of being lost should never happen, even though, on average, every year across Canada, over 12,000 people are lost in the wilderness, which is absurd.
Yep.
With today's technology, that should never happen.
Well, I can tell you one friend of mine, Doug, bless his soul, he used to say that when he was in the military, they learned orienteering. And one of the things that they learned, and they were given map and compass and said, okay, now go to it. And they were out, and they got lost. And the first thing they learned was check the date on your map, because their maps were all outdated. They were looking for roads that were no longer there and things like that. And it was because that was their first lesson. Those are the kind of things that you learn that you just take for granted. Okay, I got a map, but here it is. And it shows me all the topographical aspects. But if you don't check the date, you're not sure how up to date it is.
Well, if you're using an old topo map, you also have quite a difference in the magnetic declination and correction.
Right.
So you may actually calculate your compass and your map and find out you're out by a couple of degrees or more. And for every 1 degree you're out, you're going to miss your target by 17 meters per kilometer. So using an old map, you got to be careful. You try to use the newest maps. And nowadays, with a lot of the new GPSs, you can get like Backroads Map 3D.
Yes.
And the newer ones even have Crown Land maps on them. That's really good to have too.
Well, yeah, a lot of them now have satellite connections. So they triangulate with satellites to put you exactly where you are, not just a guess, which is really interesting as well. But I know you mentioned about the deviational shift. And I was at a lecture with Professor Dr. Ball out of Winnipeg. And his belief was a lot of what's taking place on the globe is because of deviational shift. Now, maybe can you give a background? I can talk about deviational shift and what it is.
All right. That's okay. So as a survivalist prepper,
right?
I'm not a doomsdayer.
Okay. What's the difference?
But I'm more trying to get prepared and preparing and teaching other people to be ready for 2 or 3 week long hydro power outages and floods and a lot of the stuff that's going on with climate change, extreme weather and storms. But there's significant evidence that is showing that the magnetic declination and adjustment has been increasing in the last 20 years faster than any time in human history, to the point where some people, certain experts, are thinking we're going to see a reversal of polls.
Yes. So what happens
is... I don't want to even think about that.
So what happens is, just so people who are listening would understand, is the Earth actually shifts on its axis. Because if you were like positive and negative, straight up and down, and it slowly deviates. Now, Professor's ball theory was that it's a normal practice. And what he used, because you mentioned about in your seminar about trappers, he went back to the Hudson's Bay fur industry and looked at all the trapping data and used lynx as the determining factor for 400 or 500 years, because lynx increase in population when the snowshoe hare increases, and the snowshoe hare increases in mild winters. So when there was large increases in the number of lynx harvested, indicate they were mild winters. So what he was saying was that the deviational shift was causing ocean currents to change their direction. And now we were getting, and the reason they call it Greenland, he says, is because the warm waters were going up along Greenland and making it very green when the Vikings were coming through. But now we're getting to that deviational shift where the Earth has changed on its axis. But that's another story.
But, I mean, this is a good story because everything that happens on our Earth and in wilderness and nature is all about cycles.
Right.
So likely these things have been going on for millions of years.
Yeah, exactly.
And so just because they're saying that the northern magnetic field has been on the move faster than ever in so-called human history,
yeah,
doesn't mean that that's abnormal. And more than likely, that's been happening for a long time. I mean, they found that when they dug under the snow on Baffin Island, they found the remnants of a tropical rainforest.
Yeah.
So obviously the whole Earth has shifted many, many times over due to tectonic plate processes and shifting of poles. So who knows? But my job is to get people more prepared for disasters and what happens if they're lost in the wilderness.
Yeah.
I stick to the more basic stuff because thinking about all these things like solar flares and...
Oh, yeah, drive you crazy.
It gets you pretty pessimistic.
Yeah. So back to your youth survival camp. So how old are these kids when you take them in, and how many in the camp, and how does it work? So they get in touch with you, they want to come to camp. Let's talk about that a bit.
So really simple. We got a website, wscsurvivalschool.com. Everything's on the website. We have flyers, we have registration forms. At the Wilderness Experience Youth Camp, it's for 9 to 17 year olds. Over 17, we have the adult camp. Although some young adults can actually come to the youth camp and train as a counselor in training, so they get something on their resume so they can actually lead camps too and get hired by other camp organizations,
right,
through the OCA or whatever other organization. So that's how it works. You don't need any experience. Any kid could come to it. Matter of fact, when the parent says, oh, my kid hates the outdoors and blah, 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 I go, they got to come to this camp because they need it more than the keeners who watch Survivor, man. They don't have to be sold on the whole concept.
Exactly. So it's good to see. And how long were the camps again? 1 or 2 days?
So the Wilderness Experience Camp is 7 days, 6 nights. And they got to spend at least a couple of nights with no tent, sleeping bag, or anything fancy.
Okay. And so this is what time of year?
It's in August, third week in August every year, because there's the least amount of bugs and the weather's not too bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, you don't want kids out there. Now, I used to run a hockey camp, and one of the things we took the kids out for a snipe hunt all the time, and we had lighters and baggers. Okay, and so what you do with the kids is we would take them out down these back roads. Now, you send them into the bush, and you had one with a flashlight and one with a bag. And then they had to make this strange noise that attracted snipe. Okay. And then so what you do is, okay, now you guys, now you need to stay here, and we're going to put the next crew out about 100 yards up, and everybody sits there and you make this noise, and then the snipe will come. And then what happens is you get the lighter to turn the flashlight on them, and the bagger jumps out, puts the bag on them, and you grab your snipe, and then we process them up for a meal. But the real story is that we end up leaving them and head back to camp, and the kids got to figure out their way back to camp from in the bush, not too far away. And I got to tell you, every time we did it, we get some kids coming back saying, you know, can we do it again tonight? Because I'm sure I heard someone, I thought I saw something there, and I want to go back and do it again. But it was a way to show them not to be afraid in the dark.
Well, that's a big thing about kids at camp.
Yep.
Is we want to teach a lot of survival skills, but we also want to have fun.
Yes.
And so a big part of it is singing songs by the campfire, telling kind of scary stories. I don't want to say pranks because I've been known to bring a bear costume.
Yep.
Usually that's for the one group of girls who don't want to do anything. They're always, you know, oh, my mom does all of that. So I've been known to sneak up at night in a bear costume and then go, rah, 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 and then next thing you know, all heck breaks loose and it's sheer panic. But I mean, the big reason we run programs for kids and actually for adults,
right?
It's not just survival. It's also because of what we call nature deficit disorder. So okay. many kids and adults are suffering from too much cell phones, laptops, and virtual reality lifestyles. And so what's happening is they're losing the ability to have common sense and to have logical thinking and decision-making and risk-taking. And so these are important thing to do is get people outdoors.
Exactly.
Kids especially.
We ran a kids' fishing day, as I mentioned on one of the other podcasts, and we had like 5,000 kids out. DU is part of it. That's what the podcast we mentioned and on. But it was designed to get kids out and to get them with a rod and a reel in their hands. And we stocked a huge pond with them. We had people to show them how to fish. And it was a great opportunity for other organizations to expose a lot of these kids in the outdoors rather than sitting at home playing video games. And now it's time for another testimonial for Chaga Health and Wellness.
Okay, here we are in Lindsay with Bill, who's actually, this gentleman has given blood over 230 times.
233, yeah.
233, and that's amazing. And you've had some success with Chaga. Tell us what you're dealing with and what you did and how you, what you used.
Well, I had mild high blood pressure, wasn't very, really high, but I was on medication for a few years. Right. And then I quit drinking coffee and started drinking this tea, the combination tea, the green and the Chaga.
Right.
And my medication is gone.
Your medication's gone?
Gone.
And you couldn't give blood during the other times?
Yeah, I could.
Oh, you could?
I could, yeah.
Yeah, so.
But a few times the machine kicked me out.
Oh, yeah.
So, but now it doesn't anymore.
So you think the green tea and the Chaga was helped normalize your blood pressures?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good.
Because it wouldn't be just stopping coffee. It would have to be something else.
And that's the only thing you did different?
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for that.
And my blood pressure is probably that of a 40-year-old man, and I'm 71.
Oh, very good. Well, that's good to hear. Thank you very much for that.
No problem.
Okay.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special offer from Chaga Health and Wellness. If you've listened this far and you're still wondering about this strange mushroom that I keep talking about and whether you would benefit from it or not, I may have something of interest to you. To thank you for listening to the show, I'm going to make trying Chaga that much easier by giving you $1 off all our Chaga products at checkout. All you have to do is head over to our website, ChagaHealthAndWellness.com, place a few items in the cart, and check out with the code CANOPY, C-A-N-O-P-Y. If you're new to Chaga, I'd highly recommend the regular Chaga tea. This comes with 15 tea bags per package, and each bag gives you around 5 or 6 cups of tea. Hey, thanks for listening. Back to the episode.
Now, David, you recently, I think it was last week maybe even, you were teaching at where? Humber? What do you teach at Humber?
Okay, so occasionally I run a very basic outdoor skills day in the GTA at different locations. Nothing too fancy, because anything fancy we do up north in a wilderness or in a crown land or in my own private properties. So last Sunday I was doing a basic outdoor survival skills day. And if you remember, last Sunday it was a high of 0 with gusty gale force winds. It felt like minus 15 outside. Couldn't believe it.
Right.
And unlike today where it's beautiful. I mean, when the sportsman show starts, it's a sure sign of spring. Forget about the groundhog.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we go out, and about an hour in, people are freezing. One lady, she was frozen. She could hardly talk. So I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to loan you my parka that I'm wearing because I'm toasty. And I'm just going to stay for the whole day with a good warm wool hat, warm wool socks, and my merino wool long johns. I don't need a parka. I'll be warm. She goes, are you sure? Are you sure? I go, yeah, yeah, here, here, here. Well, 4 hours later, the group was like, is he still alive? He spent the whole day minus 15 with no jacket. And I go, I'm still alive because I got body fat and I'm acclimatized. I live up north, so I get more used to the cold temperatures.
Yeah.
And anyway, they were learning basic skills, how to use a tarp to make a shelter, how to build a survival kit, how to start a fire without matches using a ferro rod and magnesium steel wool. And they had a good day. End of the day, one guy goes, you're like a real mountain man, man of steel. I go, no, I'm not. I'm just used to the outdoors more than you guys are. And over time, you're going to get to know that you got to, like, at the end of the day, you better think about upgrading your clothing, your footwear, and your survival kit.
Yes. So tell us, these programs like that, how do people get into that, or how do they do it, or to get to Humber, or where can they reach out to find out more about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, yeah, it's really simple. On my website, wscsurvivalschool.com, I have a calendar of 2024 events, including all the one-day courses, all the two-day and weekend overnight courses, and all the one-week camps. And so you can sign up right online. I got a PayPal feature right there, or e-transfer. It's so simple, it's not even funny.
So what I need to ask, what kind of price are we looking at? I mean, some people may be listening to this in the future, so this is 2024 pricing. What kind of price would people look for, or something like that?
Yeah, so for a basic one-day course, it's $79, including tax. For an overnight, it's usually $159 tax in.
No, that's very reasonable.
Well, and a one-week camp, including all your food supplies, is $695.
We don't raise
our prices. Like, we're living in a world where gouging is the norm, so we want to make things affordable so the average family, the average parent, what have you, can afford to go to our programs.
So when somebody goes to camp, what do they need to bring with them? I mean, you got a brand new person, and it was when my kids were in school, grade school, they go to camp. So they went to nature camps, conservation camps, and things like that. And our kids showed up with backpacks and a backpack each. And it was loaded. And of course, the thing on the top of the backpack is a rain gear. The first thing that comes out, just in case it starts raining. And everybody else is showing up in suitcases and garbage bags, taking their stuff. And they look and they go, and the teacher goes, now there's some kids who know what they're doing. So what does somebody need to take to a camp like this? And what should they
have? All right. So any kid that signs up for camp, we send a packing list.
Okay.
So they can prepare. So the parents can prepare. But the basic things every kid has to show up with is proper clothing, a rain jacket, a Gore-Tex raincoat would be the best, but whatever they have, some warm clothing and footwear, outdoor footwear, not like,
cowboy boots
or running shoes,
yeah,
if possible. And then a sleeping bag would be really good. Anything they don't have, we outfit.
Right.
So if they don't have a tent, they don't have a sleeping bag, don't have an underpad, that's okay. We supply all the survival gear, everything else. I mean, I'm ready to bring out 30 people at a time. And I know I didn't answer you earlier, but we keep our group sizes small. So that way the kids are learning a lot. So max 20 kids at a camp with like three instructors and leaders. So that way they're not as, like, I've been to camps. I've actually ran programs for tons of different camps where they have 300 kids each session. And I prefer the small camp.
I remember when my kids, when I was minister, it'd be around 2002, I believe it was. We took them up a place halfway between Sault Ste. Marie and Timmins. And it was basically, when I used to go there, it was you drive in past the first set of falls, and then it was 8 hours downriver to the top camp. And then from there farther, we would do five portages to get to where we're going eventually. But when we got there, we'd set up a camp, and we're not bringing underbeds, so we would cut spruce browse and pine browse as base material to put to sleep on top of to keep you off the ground is one of the things. And the reason I mention that is my kids were less than 10 years old, and Garrett would have been probably 6 or 7 at that time. And it's just to expose them to get to use that, and they just loved it. We saw moose when we were going down river. We saw bald eagles. We saw all kinds of stuff that was just amazing to see that they never forgot. And it's a great time to get out and learn all about all those different things.
Well, you hit it right on the nail. And that's probably why tens of thousands of people come to the Toronto Sportsman Show and come to my programs. And it's why I led 5,000 kids at camps in my career. It's why I met a guy here today. He's 33 years old. He said, I went to your camp when I was 12. It was the best time of my life. You impacted us. Please keep doing it. I go, I'm getting older, but I'm going to try the best I can. I go, so that's what it's all about, the memories, the experiences, and learning. And, yep. Well, I mean, I got to tell you that that's my proudest part of my world and my life. I mean, yeah, I got a lot of money made in TV reality shows and everything else. But the best thing I've ever done in my life is those memories and those experiences. And I don't know. I think I'm the wealthiest person on earth because of that.
Yeah. Now, you mentored actually some notables in TV as well and survivalists, right? Who's one you would like to mention?
Well, I know you were going to bring that up.
Okay.
And it's Survivor Man, Les Stroud.
Right.
The famous, world-famous Survivor guy on all these TV series. And he's become world-famous. He's got 1,000,001 awards. He's also a fabulous musician. But here's the story. You want to hear the real story here?
Uh-huh.
All right, he came to my course at Humber College in the early 1990s, and his world was in disarray. Because when you're part of the music and TV industry, it's a tough industry. And from my understanding, partying almost killed him.
Okay.
And he bottomed out. And then he came to a course because he saw a flyer at a library that said survival course. And he remembered one of the best times of his life when he was a scout. And that's what got him started.
Oh, yeah.
And everything else is history. And I'm really proud of that. Like at a recent show, he hugged me and says, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. I go, well, actually, I gave you, you paid your tuition fee like everybody else. So don't worry about it. That was been paid long. And besides, you're giving me tons of business now. So I appreciate that. I hugged him back, right? So
that's very good. Now, okay, one other thing you mentioned, we talked about preppers and things like that. So what's the difference? And kind of give us some background because, you know, you see some of these Last of Us, where they got preppers in that TV series where cordyceps now go wild and attack humans and there's preppers in there. And what's the difference between a prepper and a survivalist, so to speak? Or tell us, kind of give us a bit of a background there.
I wish the listeners could see my body language right about now.
Oh, because, it's interesting.
Okay, I'm not a doomsday hoping the world will end type of survivalist.
Right.
I've seen a lot of those kind of guys. They're completely out of touch with reality.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you want to go to Ukraine or the Middle East and see firsthand what it would be like in a total apocalyptic situation, they have no clue what they're talking about. So I teach more what to do in a power outage, a flood, tornadic storms. But it's also a very real possibility that something much bigger could happen. That's right. Why I have a bomb shelter and 5-year supply of food, 3-year supply of Arabica coffee. Because if I'm going to survive in such a miserable world, I better at least have a caffeine first thing in the morning. You know, so I'm just saying, you know, we're not extremist preppers. We're more, okay, it's a smart person should be prepared for just about anything. Just like when you go in the outdoors, carry a compass, have a survival kit, proper wool clothing, a ferro rod to start a fire. Well, it's no different at home. How many people who live in the city are ready for anything?
Right.
If you live in a high-rise building, for example, that's about the worst place to be if there's a power failure that lasts for weeks. Because you don't even have a running water, hydro, heating, and no toilet. For me, I can't survive one night without a toilet. I get older. I got to go, right? So what am I going to do? Like lean over the balcony? Come on. I'm going to go down 20 flights of stairs?
So
that's just not going to happen. So anyway.
So should everybody have a bug out bag or what? Or what is a bug out bag if you know what I'm talking about?
Now you got me on another topic. Okay.
I know.
So almost every preppers conference, there's somebody talking about bug out packs. Okay. You're probably best in 99% of cases to stay where you are.
Yeah.
Because if you make a bug out pack, it's like a survival pack. You got stuff for fire, shelter, water, purification, first aid, navigation, all that kind of stuff, right? But if you don't know how to survive in the woods and you just have a bug out pack as some guy showed you how to make one, you're in a much riskier situation being on the move.
Right.
Rather than fortify and stay put. Now, having said that, when we had an ice storm in Toronto a few years ago and there was a power outage that lasted for a few weeks when one transformer went down.
Yep.
A lot of people were in a bad situation. In that kind of situation, I think I would have bugged out if I live in a high-rise condo. and I would have rented a motel up north or an RV, something, and get the heck out of town.
Yes.
Because that was, you know, you can't even get the medical people, to, if you have a heart attack, to get up 12 stories to help you and save your life. So you got to understand, if you live in a house, you probably should invest in a solar system, have a couple of backup generators. And you know what the basic thing is? All people should have backup minus 30 sleeping bags, wool blankets, extra wool clothing, a supply of high-carb foods, a way to have water and purify, and maybe just invest in one of these little chemical RV toilets so if all else fails, you still can go.
Yeah. So now I'm very cognizant of your time, and I know you got to get back to the stage. That's what I've been keep looking at my clock for. Now, tell us about your book, because you got a book, and it's very popular. You've done very well. Tell us about your book, and give us a bit of a background, and here's a chance to plug and talk about David Arama's book. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I got a call from Simon & Schuster, and they said, we want you to write a book, and we'll pay you to do it. I go, wow, that's rare. Most of the time, you got to mortgage your house. I go, sign me up. And they go, what do you want it to be? We want it to be under a format of 501 essential survival skills for home, work, outdoors, travel, and anywhere disaster strikes. I go, yeah, I can do that. I go, what? 501 tips. Okay, this is complicated. And then I go, how much time do I have? Like a year to write it? They go, no, 6 weeks. Christmas is coming. We need it done fast. I go, I can't do any research. It's going to be all from my head. They go, that's why we're hiring you, because you supposedly know some of this. I go, good. Okay, sign me up. 6 weeks later, it was done. We've sold 15,000 copies.
Very good.
And interestingly enough, people were skeptical. They said, you know, don't put anything about pandemics because there's too many of these zombie shows on TV. It's all stupid. And yep. So we don't even have a section on pandemics. I said we should. They go, no, don't put that in. Well, guess what? COVID struck. And all of a sudden, this starts selling. Because people were fighting over toilet paper at Costco.
Right.
So if you understand how that all works, then you know why we wrote the book.
Very good. Well, David, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you got to get back to MC and open the next presenter on stage. But we really appreciate your time being here at the Sportsman Show and giving us some insight on both the survival aspect and all the do's and don'ts and what to look for. And how do people get in touch with you?
Simply email david@wscsurvivalschool.com.
Very good. And just for those out there, it's something else to learn on what to do and how to do it under the canopy.
And don't forget to buy Chaga over at ChagaWellness.com. And when you start making that Chaga juice, you got to go Chaga, 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 Chaga.
All right. Thanks, David.
What brings people together more than fishing and hunting?
How about food?
I'm Chef Antonio Maleca, and I've spent years catering to the stars. Now, on Outdoor Journal Radio's Eat and Wild podcast, Luigi, Hookset, and I are bringing our expertise
and Rolodex to our real passion, the outdoors.
Each week, we're bringing you inside the boat, tree stand, or duck blind and giving you real advice that you can use to make the most out of your fishing game.
You're going to flip that duck breast over once you get a nice hard sear on that breast. You don't want to sear the actual meat.
And it's not just us chatting here. If you can name a celebrity, we've probably worked with them. And I think you might be surprised who likes to hunt and fish.
When Kit Harington asks me to prepare him sashimi with his bass, I couldn't say no.
Whatever Taylor Sheridan wanted, I made sure I had it.
Burgers, steak, anything off the barbecue. That's a true cowboy.
All Jeremy Renner wanted to have was lemon ginger shots all day.
Find Eating Wild now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.